I'm very concerned to carry through a burden that God has placed in my heart, which I will now describe to you. We have entered into a new era in missions, in world evangelization. I'm persuaded of that. I don't stand alone. There are other missiologists. That's just a fancy scholarly word for people who concentrate on studying missions. But there are many missiologists who share that conviction with me. Now, what is the nature of this new era that we've entered into? Well, for one thing, we are witnessing the internationalization of missions. Now, what does that mean? It means that in view of the fact that the body of Christ is global in extent, there are 223 political states according to the United Nations. When the Lord Jesus said, "As you go, disciple all the nations." The Greek term for nations is ta ethne, the nations, from which we get our terms ethnography, ethnic, and so forth. He was not referring to the political states. He was referring to the socio-cultural ethnic groups of the world. Now, scholars have determined that there are roughly, and this is a very rough estimate, about 20,000 such groups in the world. That might be a little bit inflated. There are roughly 6,000 distinct languages, not counting dialects, in the world today, and I think that language is a very, very important criterion, but it's not the only one for discriminating these people groups and differentiating them from one another. Now, our task is far from finished. I tried to emphasize that this morning. And yet, when people hear about these awesome figures, statistics of so many people who need to be evangelized, sometimes they become disheartened. On the contrary, we shouldn't be discouraged at all. As I indicated, there are over 60,000 people every day becoming Christians in the world. I mean, that's absolutely unparalleled in the history of the church. Now, what's the significance of this? Well, I mentioned this morning, I think I did anyway, that on the day of Pentecost, there are about 3,000 believers, a little more than that, that the population of the world at that time was about 250 million people. Now, today, there are 17 times as many people who need to be evangelized as the 250 million of that day. But, and this is the significant fact, there are not 17 times as many believers in the world today as there were on the day of Pentecost. There are 86,000 times as many Bible-believing Christians in the world today. Now think about that. That's an awesome figure. Now that ought to be very encouraging in addition to the fact that over 60,000 people are becoming Christians every day. And yet, at the same time, there are an additional 300,000 people born into the world every day. Now, that's an increase of 300,000 a day. You don't have to be a brilliant mathematician to figure out that numerically we're losing ground. Yet, at the same time, we're keeping up percentage-wise. Now, I don't want to go into all of the figures and how that works out, but there are more Christians today, percentage-wise, in the world, and even numerically for that matter, than ever before. Now, are we supposed to have any kind of priorities in world evangelization, or are we supposed to simply more or less indiscriminately witness everyone around us with the same sense of urgency and priority about them? Unfortunately, some people have interpreted Romans 1:16 as primarily prescriptive rather than primarily descriptive. When Paul says, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek," or the Gentile. Now, in the world today, there are well over 200 Christian organizations that make it their focus in ministry to reach Jews. Now, there are about 15 million Jews in the world. Now, I'm all for evangelizing the Jews. But think of that. Over 200 mission organizations reaching out to Jews compared to how many who are reaching a so-called hidden people's group. 16,750 is a figure that is usually accepted. Or reaching the overseas students. Now, in the United States, there are 7 million non-immigrant, non-tourist international visitors every year right now, and that number is increasing dramatically. If you were to add to that the tourists, there would be over 20 million tourists every year in addition to the 7 million non-tourists. There are very few Christian organizations that are seeking to minister to these people. But we come to a very, very important fact. That since World War II, over 100 new nations have been born. They're intensely nationalistic in contradistinction to the West now. This is an interesting sort of historical development. Nationalism in Western nations has diminished, while nationalism in the non-Western world seems to be growing and intensifying. There are over 30 nations that totally prohibit the entrance of foreign missions within their borders, foreign missionaries. 67 nations oppose the propagation of the gospel within their borders. Now, just the 30-plus nations comprise over half the population of the world. Now, that's an astounding figure. Today, there's a great deal of interest in reaching mainland China. And there ought to be. But people either don't know or they perhaps treat as trivial the very important statistic that there are over 40 million Chinese outside of mainland China, not counting Hong Kong and Taiwan. Chinese everywhere. In fact, I don't think I've ever been to a city anywhere that didn't have a Chinese restaurant. And well, they're great cooks. I love Chinese food. And even in my hometown of only 40,000 people, we have three Chinese restaurants. And now, what's the significance of that? Well, let me give you another interesting fact. In Southern California, there are about 1,000 Korean pastors, Bible teachers, and evangelists. There are 250 Korean churches. One of them has about 1,500 people every Sunday, right in Los Angeles, all in the Korean language. But still, there are some Americans who are going to South Korea as foreign missionaries, struggling with the language. And I've been in Korea a number of times. Do you know that the one city in the world that has more theological schools than any other is Seoul, Korea? There are over 50 theological schools, seminaries, what you'd call theological colleges here. Now, what does all of this mean? Well, just keep that in the back of your mind. Now, some of you may have heard of a book by J. Edwin Orr entitled Campus of Flame, or maybe a book by David Howard, who was for many years with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and now head of WEF, the Executive Secretary of the World Evangelical Fellowship. He wrote a book entitled Student Power in World Evangelization. Both of these books have the same thesis, that the greatest surges in expansion in world missions came from student groups. Renewal, revival, spiritual awakening among students. Now, there's something else very interesting. Ralph Winter, who is a good friend of mine, internationally respected missiologist, he was telling me not long ago that he was in a certain Midwestern city in the United States, and he was asked to speak to a group of evangelical university students at a particular campus. and to speak on missions to them. And he was there several days, and he had taken a great deal of literature with him, and these students bought everything that he had, $1,500 worth, and they signed up for more literature. Fantastic, the interest, the enthusiasm for evangelizing the world. And then, I think it was the same city, he was invited to take a week of meetings at a Christian college, a Bible college. Do you know how much literature he sold at the Bible college? 10 cents worth. The whole week he had the same amount of literature. He saw that it was all put out on tables. 10 cents worth. And apart from their chapels, the special assembly meetings that they were required to come from, the other meetings in the evening, there were only two or three students. The point that I'm making is this. That the greatest enthusiasm and the greatest dedication that we're seeing to world evangelization is not in the seminaries or the theological colleges, the Bible colleges, the Christian colleges, or Christian universities. We have one that's called that. Well, maybe a couple of them now in the United States. It's among students who are at secular universities, Christian students. Now, one of the greatest resources in the world for completing the Great Commission. And none of us should have any doubt that that has top priority and that that is what our Lord wants us to do, is to fulfill His mandate to evangelize the whole world, to see a contextualized church established in every culture in the world. And we're still far from doing that. But one of the greatest resources consists of these university students all over the world. Now, when I first went out to the Middle East, we had, generally 50 to 100 students coming to our conferences, or what you call camps here. And there was some evidence of God working in a wonderful way among university students. But let me tell you, today when I go to the Middle East, there are hundreds and hundreds, even thousands, in a city like Cairo, where I go. Not your group, Cairo, here. Cairo. And this is happening all over the world. In this little booklet, and I was having someone read the rough draft, and he said, "Oh, that's a terrible exaggeration. Nobody will believe that," because I said there are hundreds of thousands of evangelical students in the non-Western world. He said, "No, that you can't say that." Well, then I went on to tell him that, look, when I was in Korea last year, I talked to the head of the InterVarsity Christian Work in South Korea. And I said, "Do you know how many evangelical university students there are in South Korea?" He thought for a while. He said, "Well, there are at least 150,000, maybe 200,000. Now, just think of that. That's phenomenal. That's just in South Korea. So it's no exaggeration when I say there are several hundred thousand around the world. Nigeria has, I don't know how many, tens of thousands at their 26 main universities. A lot of Christians in Nigeria. Right now, almost 50% of Africa professes to be Christian, and mostly evangelical. Now, what does all of this mean? These university students, to a great extent, are the future opinion shapers and decision makers and leaders of the world. And I'm convinced that the church has been neglecting one of the main, if not the main, resource for completing the Great Commission. Now, this proposal that I outline in the booklet that I just showed you, and I'm very concerned about, is a proposal to establish adjunct training institutes, as I call them. Adjunct meaning alongside of, but not an integral or official part of something. Adjunct training institutes alongside of universities and technical colleges all over the world where there are Christian university students. To give them goal-oriented training so that they can function effectively in carrying out the Great Commission in the world. Now you see, in many parts of the world, a white face is not very acceptable. I remember when I was in Taiwan one time, and in fact, I was staying with some American missionaries, a medical doctor, and they had a Chinese, Taiwanese, girl working for them. And she was taking me around to meet various Christians in Taiwan, in Taipei. And I said, Gloria, her name was Gloria, I said, would you tell me how the people view Americans here? She said, no. And I said, I'd really like to know. She said, no, I can't tell you. She didn't want me to lose face. And those of you who are Chinese, you understand the culture. And so I pestered her for about 15, 20 minutes, and I said, I wish you'd tell me. I said, you can tell me anything. I won't mind. And she finally said, you really want to know? And I said, yes. She said, we think they're proud. I said, well, Gloria, I'd certainly like to know, why do you think Americans are proud? She said, I mean, she just shot back, you know, these nice, curt, staccato answers, and she said, because they have white faces. I said, well, Gloria, they can't help it. That's how they were born into the world. I said, that's one thing. Secondly, I said, not all Americans have white faces. And she said, I don't care. We still think they're proud. Well, if you travel around in Asia and the Orient, I could see why currently, but certainly historically, reasons for that. But I noticed so many advertisements and billboards that featured Westerners, Anglo-Saxons, Europeans. So it gave this impression that they're sort of an elitist group up high. Now, I don't want to take a lot of time going to all the reasons why there is this intense and profound antipathy towards Westerners, and especially the people of Anglo-Saxon and European extraction background. So what I'm saying here is that there is an urgent need for us to understand the times in which we live and how to adjust to these revolutionary changes that have taken place in the world. Now, on the average, right now, it costs for a small American family of two, three, not more than four people, as a foreign missionary family that is sent cross-geographically, it costs $40,000 a year to keep them overseas. $40,000 a year. That's U.S. dollars. Now, they're worth a little bit more than Australian dollars, isn't that right? Now, that's a lot of money, isn't it? I think we've got to think about the economic situation in the world, the political situation, the sociocultural situation, the religious situation, the resurgence of the religions of the world. There are many other factors. Now, so here are all of these hundreds of thousands of young people, many of them with a great deal of commitment and zeal and dedication, but that's not enough. We can't go around the world and say, well, you ought to be evangelizing the world. They need instruction. They need skill. They need to be equipped. And that's what I'm very concerned about. In fact, I just can't get over what I'm seeing here in this church. I'm almost overwhelmed by it. All of these overseas students. And I say, well, I still, in fact, haven't had a chance to talk with Mr. Webb to find out just what's being done and what the objectives are and all of that. But I tell you, in America, even in our Bible schools and theological colleges, seminaries, there's not enough goal-oriented training that is focused on biblical goals and priorities that we ought to, in fact, aspire toward. There's so much that is hit and miss. And in America, I can't talk about here, but I can talk about the United States. There's still very little understanding of how theological training should be done. What is theology for? What is the church for? What ought our objectives to be? Now, I'm going to be telling, especially Tuesday evening and Wednesday evening, about some absolutely outstanding examples of how certain overseas students have come to the Lord while they were students in the West and have been used mightily in their own countries when they've returned. Now, that's one facet of it. But the weakest facet of a ministry to overseas students in America is in terms of follow-up. But I'm talking about seeing these adjunct training institutes established all over the world. Now, let me just give you very briefly the four main objectives that the training would be geared toward, and in fact this would be, what we call track training, not the kind of training that we see going on in a lot of educational institutions today. It would also be non-residential. I'm not talking about setting up a school as such, or a campus and the buildings and all the business. That is something that to me is really quite impractical. Biola University, which is actually Talbot Seminary where I've taught, is one of the graduate schools at Biola University, and they gave me a dossier of their letters and plans on establishing a Christian university that would be a counterpart to Biola, but establishing it in Kenya. I was amazed at all of the red tape. You use that expression here, don't you? The red tape, the cost, the estimated cost of millions of dollars. And then, of course, when you start something like that in another country, there's always a possibility that it'll be confiscated, just as Mengistu in Ethiopia has confiscated a $15 million Christian radio station, and he's using it to broadcast Marxist propaganda throughout East Africa. But there are so many liabilities connected with that, enormous problems. It would take us 1,000 years to do that sort of thing all over the world. But here's something else that is even more significant than that. Most of the top caliber Christian young people in the world will not go to a Christian school, they'll not go to a seminary, they'll not go to a Bible school. Why? Well, because the pressures from their extended families are so great that if they have the intellectual ability to go to a university, that's where their families want them to go, to acquire a marketable skill. They are facing and struggling with terrible economic insecurity. And, for example, right now in Egypt, where I spent 3 months last year, I expect to be there in October this year, God willing, young people tell me, you know, we have to have $20,000 saved up if we want to get married. $20,000 in a country that has a per capita income of $250 a year. In order to get a flat, by the way, if I were saying that in the United States, they'd think I was talking about a tire with no air left in it, because we only say apartments. But in order to get a flat in Cairo, Egypt, you have to pay key money of at least $2,000 and more like $5,000 to $10,000, which is really a bribe. You'll never see it again. If you can find a flat, a city that was built for 2 million people now has 15 million people, one third of the population of Egypt. It's an incredibly difficult situation. So all over the world, and by the way, in much of the non-Western world, now not without exception, but I would say in the majority of non-Western countries, the Christian community has a way of rising to the top. It's like cream and milk. Because of the motivation and the self-discipline that is brought to the lives of people by Christ. And so some of the brightest young people are the Christians. Now you can see the situation. The parents are saying, listen, you know, we're on the edge of starvation. We don't know what the future is going to be like. Now, you have the intellectual ability to go on to a university. So they send them to secular universities. That's why most of the overseas students here are in the secular universities. They're not in your theological colleges, are they? I doubt it. Now, I don't think we should fault them for that. That makes a lot of sense to me. If a Christian will not provide for his own household, he's worse than an unbeliever. He's denied the faith. Well, we've got to go to where they are. I'm talking about terms of dedication and giftedness. You'll find most of them at the secular universities of the world. In fact, something else you'll find, there are 500 theological institutions in Asia right now. 500. Bong Ren Ro is the executive secretary that coordinates a great deal of the activity pertaining to these 500 theological institutions. But you know what I find all over the world? That many of the students, it may be the majority, are in those theological institutions because they could not qualify to get into a secular university. And so they have nothing else to do, and they're not there out of commitment. They're not They're out of a great deal of dedication. And very often in a theological institution in the non-Western world, you find a very demoralized atmosphere among the students. And they're prey to all kinds of doctrinal aberrations and heretical notions and theological liberalism. And I can tell you that in the Middle East, maybe I shouldn't name the institution, but if there's anything that has been more counterproductive to the cause of Christ in the entire Middle East, it's been this one theological institution, which I know very well, because it has done nothing but undermine confidence in the Bible and in the Christian faith. And these are the ministers who've gone out throughout the Middle East to occupy pulpits and corrupt all the people. That's the way that system works all over the world. All right, what are these objectives? Now, you see, God has given us the resources all over the world. Now, we've got this staggering, large, enormous, almost impossibly large task before us. You say, how can we do it? Over 4 billion people. All of the cultures and all the languages and all the other problems in the world. But listen, at the same time, God in His sovereignty has raised up all the resources that are needed today. No one has put them all together. That's the problem. We just have not yet put them together. And that's what I'm interested in doing by God's grace. Now, what am I talking about? Well, first of all, we've got the resources of the young people. But we've also got the resources of people all over the world who are capable of training them. Not only in a classroom situation, but training in a life situation. And this can be done alongside of and concomitant with their training in the secular university. Now, I know that there are a lot of problems connected with that. We've tried to think through these, and in fact, half of this booklet consists of questions and answers to these questions about how this is going to work. Now, with communication today, teaching aids, transportation. In fact, in the non-Western world, which in my mind has priority, and I mentioned Romans 1:16, that should not be taken primarily as a prescription, but a description, that historically the gospel went first to the Jew and then to the Greek. If you want missiological priority, look at Romans 15:20, where Paul says, I make it my ambition to proclaim Christ where He's not been named. All right, now, we've got all of the resources. And first of all, our intention, God willing, is to train some of these Christian university students all over the world to be equipped to function effectively in, number one, the role of servant leadership in local churches. There's a dearth and a desperate need for people like this. One reason, in fact, that in many countries of the world, university graduates aren't attracted to churches and say, we don't want to have anything to do with the church, is because the level of education is so low. And they just feel that it's not on a par with what they're used to. I think if we can get more of these university students in positions and roles of leadership in the church, that could help to rectify that situation. Plus, of course, being of great assistance in carrying out the purpose of the church in general. But I can't linger on these. I must hurry on. Secondly, we want to train some of them to be church planters in pioneer societies with frontier peoples. You see, all of the 16,750 people groups in the world that are still to be evangelized, they're all within one or more of these 223 nation states. Now, why should we think that only Americans or Canadians or Australians or New Zealanders should be the ones to go and reach them? In many cases, they can't reach them. They can't get in to do it. But you see, in virtually every one of the 223 nations, there's already a church, sometimes small, sometimes struggling, but in other cases, vibrant and growing. And there are people, there are young people who could be trained. They're as gifted, they're as bright, they're as intelligent, they're as dedicated as any Western young people. And they can be trained to reach these people. Now, for example, in Egypt, there are the Nubian people in the southern part of Egypt. which they call Upper Egypt. It's a little bit confusing. But anyway, why should an American go as a foreign missionary? By the way, he couldn't do it anyway today because the government will not allow him to go in that way. But if possible, why should an American go there, or even an Australian, when in fact there are literally hundreds, in fact several thousand that I know of, because we've got our training program going there. That's our pilot project, so far as an adjunct training institute is concerned, in Cairo. These young people who are citizens of the country, have freedom of movement, they can go and reach the Nubians. That's one of our objectives. But you see, this could be done all over the world. Now I begin this booklet with a story. It's really a thrilling story of Rudy Barlan, a Filipino, who was an engineering student, and he had a great burden to reach one of the tribes of the Philippines. There's still many tribes that are unreached there. And so he went to Wycliffe Bible Translators, and he said, "Would you give me the same kind of training that you're giving to Americans here in Manila?" Well, they hadn't done that before, and they said, "Well, we don't know about that," and it took a lot of persuading. Finally, they relented, and they said, okay. So he would take one course a semester, one or two courses a year. During his vacation period, he'd concentrate. When he graduated, he'd spend a few months. He learned New Testament Greek. He learned phonetics and phonemics and a host of other subjects. And he went out to reach the Isnags of the Philippines. And just a couple of years ago, he completed the translation of the entire New Testament into their language, and there's now a flourishing, growing church among the Isnags. Now, this was an engineering student. And as I understand it, he's worked part-time as an engineer in Manila, and he makes these trips, and now he's training other young people. Why can't we duplicate that all over the world? What a thrilling thing for some of you overseas students. Maybe to give a few years of your life to doing something like that, or to be involved in some direct way. Well, that's another objective, and I must hurry on here. Thirdly, we want to train some of them to be apologetic specialists. Every society in the world has its particular rivals to the Christian faith. It may be Islam, it may be Buddhism, it may be Hinduism, it may be Marxism, secular humanism. We need young people who are trained, who know the primary sources, who know how to think critically, who know something about logic and about rhetoric and how to write and how to speak. We've got to do this. We've got to get into that kind of an arena today. But I'll tell you, the level of understanding and ability to communicate the gospel on the part of people in these countries is very, very low. Well, fourthly, we want to train some of them to be equipped to spearhead a ministry to overseas students and other visitors in their cities. Virtually every city in the world now is cosmopolitan. And do you know that at the beginning of this century, only 13% of the population of the world resided in urban centers, 87% in rural areas? By the end of the century, we're getting there very quickly now, by the end of the century, there will be 87%, see, just the opposite, 87% of the world's population in cities, and about 13% left in the rural areas. Now, that would mean 5.5 billion people by the year 2000 in the cities of the world. Now, in Cairo, Egypt, there are 15,000 students from the Sudan who are studying in the university. They're lonely. They want friends very desperately. They're more open to the gospel there than they will ever be in their lifetime. They're away from the pressures of their society and their family that would keep them in Islam. That's the time to reach them. Now, the Christians in Cairo, Egypt ought to be trained. They ought to learn what hospitality means, what it means to reach out in friendship to these people. These are the future leaders. We estimate that at least one-fourth to one-half of the leaders of the 1990s and the first decades of the 21st century are now studying in the West. In fact, right now, out of the 223 nations in the world, 40 of them have been foreign students in the West. But they weren't reached, most of them, for Christ while in the West. Now, these are the objectives. And there's so many people today who think, well, I'm concerned about reaching the world, and perhaps I'll go to some place in Asia or in Africa or Latin America as a missionary. But let's stop and think about this now. What is the significance of all these people coming here to Melbourne from other countries? Have we thought in terms of training them? How about an adjunct training institute here in Melbourne? So that instead of having a camp that says, well, we're going to talk about spiritual maturity or servanthood or something else, that may be fine, it may be good, but if it's not integrated into some clearly defined objectives that are deeply biblical, I'm just wondering about all of this expenditure of energy. If we don't have objectives, if we don't have goals, then we're certainly not going to achieve what ought to be achieved. If you aim at nothing, you're bound to hit it. And so this is what's very much on my heart now. And as I travel around the world, and in fact we've just sent several hundred copies of this booklet to evangelical leaders all over the world, the letters that I'm receiving are very heartening, very encouraging. There's interest, there's need. And so my home office, and this is under the auspices of an organization known as International Services and Education. My home office, we've got a computer, a word processor, and I have with me, in fact, a questionnaire, 4 pages with a covering letter of 3 pages that we're giving to people who are potential instructors in these adjunct training institutes. People with other positions, we're not asking them to leave those positions. We're not asking them to go as a missionary as such, although they'll be functioning as a missionary. But we're asking them, if they're willing, to give at least 2 weeks or up to a year to teach in one of these adjunct training institutes only as God leads them. And eventually, we're going to have, I think, the most extensive data bank on Christian scholars all over the world who want to be involved. So that if, let's say, and all of these adjunct training institutes are going to be autonomous in the local area, this is not a hierarchical organization. They're going to be autonomous. There'll be a local director and a local board. And they map out plans, let's say, for the next 2, 3, 4 years, and they write to our office and they say, look, we don't have people in this area who can give instruction in these particular areas that we've outlined in this tentative curriculum in the booklet. Can you help us, they say. Now, I might say to you that we want to see at least 80% of the instructors in these adjunct training institutes in the non-Western world, we want to see them as non-Westerners. In other words, we don't want Westerners dominating this, but at least 80% will be non-Western instructors. That's possible today. It's amazing as to the resources all over the world in the non-Western world. All right, so we feed this information into our computer, and out comes maybe the names of 6, 10 people from different parts of the world. We send them the information, the data from the questionnaire, and we say, all right, now you contact these people directly. So here's this network of adjunct training institutes. We've got people who are rotating and moving about all over the world to provide this instruction in the classroom, maybe even if it's once a week, and during vacation times concentrating, but also being with these students on the campus in personal contact, discipling on a personal level, but aiming at some objectives that are going to enhance the quality and the quantity of the church around the world. Now, there's some missiologists who have said to me, you know, we think that this may be the last great step needed in completing the Great Commission and evangelizing the world. Well, I don't know if it's all that important. Maybe it is. But I wanted you to know about it, because I can't think of a more strategic church, certainly not in Australia and maybe in much of the world, in this church and the opportunities that you have here. And I hope that you'll give it some consideration, some thought, some prayer, and some forgiveness that I've gone over 5 minutes and didn't allow you to throw some questions at me. I don't know. I hope we have some other times that we can talk about this, because I'd really like to see what your thinking is and what's being done, and I'm hoping I'll have a chance with Mr. Webb and others to talk about what is being done. And if we can be of service, I'm not interested in extending an organizational empire, not at all. I'm interested in seeing a job done. And if it's being done without me and without this organization, that's fine. And there's a whole world out there, and the need is fantastic. I was just in Fiji, and there's such a need for this in Suva, and there's great interest in this. In 2 weeks, I saw almost 1,000 people, most of them young people, and university students, who made a commitment to Christ. The hunger there, the openness there is incredible. They need training. They need to be integrated into what Christ is doing in the world today. It's not enough to tell people what I told them this morning. Listen, this is why he's left us here. Let's not miss that. But now we've got to say, here's how you can be effective. Here's how you can be equipped in order to achieve this purpose in the optimal sense.